Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. My name is Eric. Ray and I are off this week. We're taking care of some family business, getting, you know, sometimes life gets in the way of the hobby, and but we did prepare for you a great show this week. In our tournament segment, I get an opportunity to sit down and have an intimate discussion with one of the top players currently in the meta and looks to be one of the odds-on favorites to be in the top eight for LVO. James Carmona, he's rocking one of the most lethal Chaos lists currently. He's won two GTs in my home state already and is also rocking one hell of a head of hair. You got to check this guy out. So we'll be talking to him at length about his strategy and how he adapted to 8th edition and some of the changes from the previous edition. In the discussion section, we're going to be talking to Brandon Miter. He is the head painter for Frontline Gaming Painting Studio. Now you're probably thinking, what does painting have to do in a competitive podcast? Well, one of the key things that you're seeing is painting has become more and more involved in the competitive scene, and there's more and more push to that. So talking about what are some of the basic tips to get you onto the field, but also what's the difference between painting for appearance scores versus painting for just getting the job done. So great discussion, and also Brandon's actually a competitive player on the side as well, so great to talk to him as well. We'll be back next week with our regular episode, but look forward to you guys and enjoying this particular episode. And again, thanks again for listening for the Exterminatus Podcast. All right, we just wrapped up here at the Unbound GT for 2017. I'm with friend of the show and your 2017 champion, James Carmona. How are you, James?
Doing really well, Eric. Thanks very much.
So first of all, second trip to Arizona in 2017, second championship in a GT.
Right.
What's the secret?
I mean, to be entirely honest with you, man, I think it has a lot to do with staying ahead of the curve with the new Codex releases.
Okay.
I do have kind of, not an inside track, but being able to kind of have recent Frankie around over at Frontline and seeing what they're doing and when they do their shoots and everything like that, it kind of does keep me on my toes. So when everybody else is you know, still trying to figure out what to do with the armies, recent Frankie are already, you know, making these videos and have pretty good knowledge about how they work. So I do have the opportunity to feed off of that. And I think that had a lot to do with the way that I come to the events.
So just to be clear, not divulging any GW secrets.
No. I want to make that perfectly clear. It's not that. I mean, they make these videos ahead of time. That's well known. It's not that. It's more along the lines of, even if you're a subscriber of their show, you can see all these video bat reps and see how the armies react to each other, and that's, I think, a really big deal. I like doing it a lot. I've studied the video,
several times.
Yeah, several times, absolutely.
You need to talk to the person whose list you copy.
What's up, Alan? All right.
One of the things that was dramatic when looking at your performance, especially in 2017, especially compared to last season. Last season, you had the ultimate Death Star list, and this season is the complete opposite. Tell me about that transformation.
So, I mean, with the advent of 8th edition, right, we went in.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks very much. So we came into the edition knowing that the Death Star was a unfun kind of feature in the last edition, right? So that went away. I mean, 8th edition, for the most part, has made it so that the game is more fun to play at any level. So coming into this new edition, I knew that I had to adopt kind of like a different play style, since my preferred method of playing in that edition was completely gone. I am really liking lots of bodies, you know, bring the boys, not the toys kind of thing. And I would say that I've stayed ahead of the curve, again, is because people just aren't used to seeing that many models on the table, especially not from Chaos, which is cool. And it helps me to get through the game and have multiple chances at doing things, multiple chances of scoring, multiple chances at trying to knock that final wound off of something. It gives you a lot of leeway.
Right.
And I think that the Death Star originally was built in the opposite way, but to kind of achieve the same ends.
Okay.
Right? Lots of rerolls, lots of rolling and redundancy. Right, so where I'm getting that through, like psychic powers in 7th and my Death Star list, I'm getting that through just number of models in this edition.
So what I'm hearing is the Death Star relied on weight of volume of fire through the rewall, so being more reliable, whereas the current is just more dice.
More dice. Yep. Okay. That's the secret. Behind my list. I really enjoy, like I said, multiple angles and being able to control the board.
Okay. Tell me a little about the list building strategy. So you sat down. Hey, 8th edition rolls out. Death Stars are dead. I got to start over. After you cried yourself to sleep, what happens next?
You know what? Hey, I'm not going to lie. You can ask Reese and Frankie this. I did fight 8th edition at the beginning. I really was not enjoying myself. I mean, it's a transformation, and it's not an easy transition at all, especially if you're a competitive person. Like, you know, you kind of want to latch on to what you know. It's tried and true.
Right.
So I had to kind of throw off that whole mantle of 7th edition altogether have that come to Jesus moment, and just like really start sitting down and seeing how you can work model placement and how to build your list to the missions.
Okay.
So in the beginning, it was a lot of Nova missions for me. And so I built my list to reflect that. You know, you want to try and, you know, get those secondaries and make your opponent not get them.
Okay.
So my first ideas for the list building in its infancy was just to build the list to react to the specific tournament that I was going to go to. And then now that ITC has made, you know, a more uniform scoring system in the championship missions, it made it even easier to kind of like, you know, take what I knew already from the other missions and just, you know, make it my own. Right.
Okay.
And so that, I think the flavor of my list is still that I like the close combat thing. Right, so it took me a long time to suss out how to get Berserkers to actually work without a delivery system like a Rhino.
Sure.
So Alpha Legion is what I did. You know, Alpha Legion, infiltrating them up. They may not get into combat every game, but I mean, they're the boogeyman on the board. You know, nobody wants to get hit by a Berserker charge, right? So they'll oftentimes take the brunt of my firepower coming from my opponent, and you know, they might die, but that's okay because I've got lots of other tools still in the list. You know,
one of the things we've been noticing with these new champions missions is you score at the bottom of your turn as opposed to having to hold on to it for a turn through.
Right.
So one of the things we've seen is move in phase and move on to those, but if you can shoot somebody off an objective, great,
right,
but you don't claim it. So that's where assault units are coming back,
because
I can take you off and take your objective.
Right, and again, back to the Berserkers, because of the additional movement that you gain through the charge, the pile, and the consolidation, it lets you move up to 12 inches into your opponent's zone and get on top of those objectives. Right, that can really throw off a game. You know, if you're, you know, getting one extra point on your opponent every single turn because of objectives or killing things.
Right.
I mean, that's at the end. I mean, a 5-point swing is a big deal. You know, going through just five rounds. If you go through all six, that, I mean, six is something you may not be able to come back from.
Okay.
You know, even if you do get all your secondaries.
Sure.
Yeah.
One of the things we talked briefly over at dinner last night was getting into the trap of point efficiencies.
Yeah.
Tell me a little more about that.
Okay, so there's certain armies that people tend to think that they have the math kind of laid out for them. Like, for example, like the Necron army, right? Everybody just decides to bring these like blocks of warriors, right? And they're doing that so they can maximize the amount of rolls they get for We'll Be Back.
Mm-hmm.
But we've noticed because of morale, right, you tend to lose a few more than you should in some cases. And then even though you're rolling a bucket of dice to try and get them back, it's not as efficient, right? Because you could just do a whole bunch of five-man squads. Your opponent has to overkill them.
Right.
Right, and then you're actually still okay if you just, you know, have the residual shooting at those little five man squads.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they tend to take a couple wounds and then maybe one guy gets back up. That works better than a 20-man unit taking a brunt of firepower, losing 16 and failing morale, and then you don't get to
use it.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, that's a point efficiency that people see on paper. It's like, oh my goodness, the more models I have, the more chances.
Mm-hmm.
That's not efficiency. That's an abstract idea. Right, and I think that in a lot of cases, the math actually in 8th edition isn't necessarily the most important thing anymore, which is cool.
Very cool. At what point does the list end and the player skill begin?
Oh, you can ask me that after a win. You know, I get to play a lot, you know, with some high-level players, and I would say that list design can actually defeat a person with this like a high skill level and a list that's not efficient. A perfect example of that happening was actually at the last GT that I played and won here in Arizona at the Imperial Outpost.
Yep.
Top table was Frankie, G, and Papa, and myself. And Frankie put on a goddamn clinic, right, on me. He, I mean, 100% was ahead of me in every way. But because of the strength of my list, he was just unable to overcome the curve.
I couldn't leave the table, honestly. I just kept watching. I was like, this is, because like I said, it was a clinic to watch.
Yeah, he's an incredibly talented player, and it was, like, in my opinion, I really didn't deserve that win. I mean, because, yeah, I did put the time into making the list, right, and believe it or not, and this is a real number, I've got over 56 hours of list building into the current list, right?
And 56 hours?
56 hours. A full-on work week and then some, right?
Right.
A week and a half. You ask how that works out. It's because, you know, again, I've got the guys over at Frontline. There are people in there that I can constantly bounce ideas off of, restructure the list. You look at missions, like, where am I losing certain missions at? What am I allowing my opponent to take, right, as far as, you know, secondaries away from me? So, you know, that the list design thing, you know, it can really... I lost my train of thought. He was asking me a question. I apologize. No, the list design. you know, the list design can actually, in this edition, for at least right now, because the things are coming out at such a machine gun pace, if your list design is really, really solid, you're going to have a lot of people still trying to, you know, feel out and plumb out the depths of each individual book. So I would say at the current time, list design actually is more important, especially given that there's, you know, so many missions you can play to. You can design basically your list structure to each individual secondary.
Okay. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
Oh, no. Thanks very much, Eric, for taking all the time to bring our mats and all the and all of the different we call it this terrain stuff, man, because it was your terrain works incredibly well in this edition, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, the line of sight blocking stuff is like amazing. I used to give you a lot of about the stuff for in 7th edition, but it's funny, like it totally changed. Now the line of sight stuff is like totally what you want.
I'm glad to mention, because one thing we, especially with this particular tournament, it was our first since we started the new missions that ITC came out with. And I was like, I don't know if we have the right pieces. I don't know if they're the right size.
They're the best.
Like, so
I mean, it's sussed out perfect, man. It's so funny.
So, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something I was kind of, okay, well, we're going to wing with the old stuff, and because some of this a little battle war, needs a new coat of paint and a couple pieces.
No, or, like, a couple they're pieces perfect. Through, so. It's really funny, because, again, for the listeners, I used to give Eric a lot of crap about the stuff not really working in 7th edition, but in 8th edition, it's perfect. So if you have a chance to come out to Eric and Don's tournaments, because they're getting a lot more talent here in Arizona, and a lot of the guys from California are making it a point to come out and compete.
I want to say I appreciate that, because we just want to point out a good show, and the fact that every show we get more and more people from out of state, and I know you've been one of our champions in California bringing more people in, so I want to thank you for that as well.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks, Eric.
Good to talk to you again. Thanks, James. Right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, everyone, this week we have a special guest. He is the head painter over at Frontline Gaming's Painting Studio, longtime friend of the show's, and also, in his spare time between mixing colors, he's actually a competitive Warhammer player. I'd like to thank Brandon Miner to the show. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks to have you here as well. So we wanted to kind of talk to you, it's a little bit of a departure from our usual format. You know, usually we talk about competitive play and players. So the idea of having something painting, some of our longtime listeners are going, oh, they're going hobby on us. So first thing we want to bring up is, you know, tell us about your competitive gaming background a little bit.
So as far as competitive gaming and tournaments, I played a lot of tournaments back in 5th edition. And that's when I became a competitive guy. But I sat out 6th edition. And then really it wasn't until I was working for Frontline Gaming that I got back into the tournaments, you know, towards the end of 7th. So, yeah. I don't know if that answers it for you.
No. So how do you feel like the transition from 7th to 8th?
So far I'm enjoying it. I think I've only been to 2 events now for 8th edition, but total blast. And I played with a Harlequin army at a GT and did pretty well. And then, I played with my Death Guard at a GT out there in Arizona. So, I really am liking 8th edition, just like I think everyone else is right now.
Right. If I remember, your Harlequin list was pretty straightforward. It was a ton of troops and everybody with fusion pistols, if I remember it correctly.
Yeah, it's 6 squads of guys with fusion pistols in their vehicles. Pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. So what's in your Death Guard these days?
We're rocking, you know, Mortarian, and then as many Nurglings as they can fit into the army, and then... big blob of 20 Marines and just some of those characters to buff them up. It's again, pretty straightforward army that just kind of moves forward and kills you.
Sounds good. So let's kind of make the transition into the painting discussion a little bit here. So one of the key things is there's this kind of this notion, this banner waving, being that you played in 5th edition, there was once a time, just like back in, there was once a time where a man never left the house without wearing a hat. You know, the day of fedoras everywhere. And there used to be a time a player never went to a tournament with unpainted models. And now all of a sudden we're seeing banners of bring hobby back. Is hobby gone? Does it need to make a comeback? Is it missing? Where do you think the hobby is in the state?
I don't know. I think that social contract is kind of slowly deteriorated, where you spent just as much time and effort as I did on my army, And I feel for, I don't know, a couple of years now, it slowly has gone away. But I know with ITC, they're bringing it back, and there's a lot of painting requirements now. And I think it's good overall for the game slash hobby, just, you know, so everyone feels like they put an effort into it. And I believe they're actually going to start doing, with ITC events, doing separate paint scores so people can actually get points for their hobby scores and such. And at the end of it, you know, they'll be a best overall hobbyist as well. So
it's pretty exciting stuff, because that's, you know, I've been playing since second edition, end of second edition, and I remember the old days with the GW packets, and that was something. They had the painting rubric, you had the scoring. So basically, if you went to an RTT, you know, you played essentially five games. Three games were the games you played against your opponents. Your fourth game was your painting score. Your fifth game was your combination of your comp score, and then it came out to like an odd number. So that's where they got the pub quiz from. So it's nice to see that the best overall is coming back into play. Nice to see that at this point. So
yeah.
So as a competitive player, is there a strategy in terms of, you know, how is it different from saying, I'm just going to paint my army, to I'm going to focus on best overall? Do I paint my army differently? Is there a strategy that's different? And or do I just get out my spray paints and go crazy?
So I'm a huge fan of get the army ready. And, you know, I don't fault the people that they may not have as high of a skill level for, you know, just being artsy-fartsy in general. But, you know, I like it when someone has put effort, regardless of how good it looks in the end, just their actual effort. So when people approach it, I just need to get it painted. As long as they can make it acceptable, I'm totally happy with that. Now, me, I'm on the other end of it because, you know, I paint for a living. So I kind of have to make my army show pieces, kind of advertising. But basically, at that point, you just attack your army like a painting rubric, like you were talking about the old RTT days. You just kind of have a general idea of what, you know, someone's looking for when judging your army, and just take every little step to do that. So, you know, whatever that may be. I don't know if I can go in more in depth for you or not.
No, I mean, it sounds like basically play to the mission, in this case, paint to the painting rubric of your particular event. And yeah, it's nice to hear that the ITC is coming out with a consistent rubric across the circuit. I think that'll make it a lot easier.
Yeah, I've heard Reese around the office, you know, mention it here and there. So it sounds like it's actually something that's going to be happening, which is nice.
I'll be glad to see it. I remember when it was first introduced, and that poor person was skewered online left and right. But it's gradually has been picking up a lot of momentum, I think. So I'm glad to see that coming through.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be like a requirement. I don't want to freak people out that aren't hobbyists at all. Like, that'll just be something else you're fighting for, you know.
So if you are that intermediate person where, you know what, I've mastered the three color minimum, what are some easy tips you can give them to get them a few extra points?
You know, making your base stand out will make an army that's just kind of so-so just pop. So I always tell people to work on their basing first, because you can go with an ultramarine army that doesn't have really any, you know, edge highlighting or, you know, any brightness to it, and then put it on just a really cool, you know, grass or snow base or something, and just make the army stand out. So that's my first step, is get people into basing. Add some flock to those bases.
What's your best technique for that?
Well, I used to just buy that static grass that you can get at, you know, most hobby shops.
Sure.
Games Workshop used to sell it. I don't know if they still do. But, you know, static grass was really good. But now I'm into those little tufts. I believe Army Painter makes a lot of them. There's
yes.
a lot of different companies that make them. But, yeah, I use the Army Painter brand tufts. It just, they're awesome.
They are pretty awesome. Yeah, I always felt like my models, I found my old Blood Bowl metal models, and it looks like they're like posing on like a putting green. You know, they got that, you know, completely, you know, c- completely consistent shade of green, you know, and then you get this horribly white line that I tried to paint over the flock to make it look like they're on a side. Oh, it's horrible. It's just,
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's just horrible and shocking. It's like a car accident. You can't stop not look at it. It's just like, oh, it's horrible. You mentioned edge highlighting. Ray, you had some questions about that.
Yeah, when I try edge highlighting personally, I notice I either seem to have too much on the brush, or I don't seem to end up having any in the right spots. is there a trick to that?
So edge highlighting's a little different, because if you overdo it, like you were saying, it'll either look sloppy or kind of like Tron. You know, it'll just look silly, just overall. So I always say, when you first start edge highlighting, that less is more. Just focus your highlights where your light source is, or where you want to tell the person looking at your model where the light source is. So usually I just will paint with a lamp over me, and wherever the light hits it the most, you just add a little bit of that highlight to it, be it a sharp edge highlight or just whatever color you were working with a little bit of white added to it, and it'll just give you that more natural highlight to it. But the edge highlighting, unfortunately, is all about brush control and how much paint you do get on the tip of the brush. I say maybe add a little bit more water than you normally would when you're doing edge highlighting. That's a good way to, keep it nice and thin, and you can have a little bit of control on the brush with that. But any excuse you can use to use the outside of your brush, like on a hard edge or something, that's the best place to do that with the line highlight. So,
I was watching your Twitch stream. You were doing the Harlequin Star Weaver, and made it look just, first of all, I loved the video. First of all, it was really easy to follow.
Thank you.
At the same point, I hated it because you made the edge highlighting look so simple. And you were just, first of all, I didn't realize how many nooks and crannies are on that ridiculous model. And you're just zipping along, and every line's perfect. I'm going, So it's interesting. You mentioned brush control as opposed to paint volume and all that.
So the speed and everything, that comes with just doing it for such a long time. Just repetition. So, edge highlighting is just one of those things that you have to practice at. It's not one of those things I can just tell you, oh, do this and you're a pro.
Got it.
That one is one of those harder things to do. That's why, I try to paint armies myself, my personal armies, with as little edge highlighting as possible. First off, so I can get it done faster. And it's just a pain in the butt to do the edge highlighting. And it's not always necessary. I don't think Nurgle guys need edge highlighting.
Sure, that's a good point. Never thought about that.
Yeah.
More organic shapes probably don't. Before we move on, this one last question about edge highlighting. So GW makes these special edge paints. I bought one and I'm afraid of it. It stares at me. What's in there? Do you recommend it? Did I just waste my money? What is this? What is edge painting?
Okay, so from my experience, and I only have one edge paint. It's the really light blue one. I forgot what it was called. Balthazar. No, it's not Balthazar. I don't remember what it's called.
Baharoff something.
That's the one. And it seems to be fine. It just kind of seems like a layer paint that's a little bit brighter. So I would say they're right in the middle between a layer and a base paint. So a little bit more pigment than the layer paints, which just means it's a little less translucent. So they do go on, usually in one coat, because it is just meant to do little tiny lines. So I don't think you've wasted your money. It's just they're really, really vibrant pastel colors. So, that's not how I generally do my edge highlights, but it really depends on what color your army is. So No, I don't think you wasted your money.
Okay, good to know. Because I keep staring at it, and I'm like, next time. Maybe next
time. Add water.
Yeah, next time. You know? You talked about vibrant colors, right? You had some questions about certain colors that were giving you trouble.
Actually, yeah. Two colors in particular have always feel like there's a trick that I haven't quite caught.
White and yellow.
I was going to say black and white, to be honest, because I've always found that they're either... Well, white I've always had problems with, just because they are. It may just be that I have bad luck, but every time I get white, it's very watery. It doesn't have the same consistency as the other paints. That might just be bad pots, but... And then, of course, black always seems to be just too... I don't want to say flat, but... It's just too cartoonish looking.
Okay. Well, if you're just trying to paint pure white, you got to start with something else besides white. Your pots probably aren't bad. It's just white paint. I don't know how the pigment works with the, you know, the chemical compound that is the paint, but... It's usually not an easy paint to put on, regardless of what brand you use. I personally like my whites and my blacks. I use Vallejo and the model color range. They have a game color range. If you're trying not to have the real flat, like you were talking about with your blacks, Vallejo's game color is a little bit shinier. It has almost a resin in the paint, so it gives it more of a hard shell, so it doesn't rub off when you're playing with it, but that shell makes it a little glossier. But with white, sorry to kind of be going off on a tangent there.
That was good. I didn't realize there was a resin in the paint. Now I'm like, oh, no idea.
Yeah. So as far as whites are concerned, the way I approach it usually is it a bad guy or is it a good guy that I'm painting? And if it's a good guy, I'll generally start with a really, really light blue. So whatever the lightest blue you have, put that down first. And then just, for the next step, add white to it. You know, do 50-50 white and that blue. And just leave a little bit of the recesses, that original blue, and paint everything else. And then just keep adding 50% more white to it until you're barely using white at the end and the whole thing looks like you painted it white. If I'm doing bad guys, I start with a light gray. But that's basically it. So when you're painting white, the white is actually just the last step and you don't actually have to use that much of it. As long as you thin your paints with some water, you shouldn't get that clumpiness that you get when you paint white. It should just stay nice and smooth. Then when you're talking blacks, again, you have to decide what you're going to highlight the black with. Because, yes, like you said, if you just paint pure black, it will kind of look cartoony and dull because it's so different than the other colors that are going to be, you know, on your model that if you just leave it pure black, it will stand out and kind of look hokey. So you got to decide what you're going to highlight, you know, then. So if you want it to be a cool black, like it's a cold model, maybe use blues to highlight your black. So just add a tiny bit of blue to your black mix and, you know, bring it up from that. You can use greens to highlight black, but, you know, I just use the tried and true grays. Just start with dark gray and bring it up a little bit lighter from there. But I think, yeah, it's whites, you want to highlight whites with white. Which is weird to say. Blacks, you want to bring it up with a different color because it'll still look black as long as you don't overdo it with whatever color you're highlighting it with. But it will be jarring and strange to look at if it's just by itself.
Okay.
You
mentioned mixing colors. Is there any special trick to that? I mean, I've never mixed paints before that aren't just like regular paints for, you know, like kids stuff, but.
Sure. So you definitely want to invest in something to be a palette for yourself. You got to get out of the habit of going from pot to model. you got to put it on something flat. I splurge and I spend about 80 cents on ceramic tiles from the hardware store. So just a plain white tile works just fine. And then you use a scraper and you can scrape it off and it's brand new again. But when you're mixing a paint, just use the same brush. And, if you're going to do 50-50, just however much paint you pulled out of the pot with that brush, clean off your brush, with water, clean it out, whatever. And then the other color, just get the same amount. and then put them on your palette and use a little bit of water and mix them together. It's pretty simple, but unless you've been taught to do that, and if you're not artistically inclined, I guess you wouldn't think to do it like that. So, but you have to have some sort of palette to be able to mix paints. So, if you were a pot to model guy, stop doing that.
So I went all out and went to my local hobby store, and they robbed me blind apparently for $8, and I got a wet palette. So,
well, those are good. Okay. Those are good, especially if you're going to be using the same color for a long time, because then that paint won't dry out on you.
Yeah, because that's one that leads into our next question. I'm a big assembly line painter. For example, I'm working on Ray's Army for what seems like 11 years now, and he's frustrated with me because not only is it taking so long, but I paint the entire army one color at a time. So I use that one color for like ever and a day. So
the wet palette is good. And for $8, you did not get ripped off. That's good.
Okay. One other question I always run into, and this is something, it's one of those, you get the new toy, and I feel like as this is the toy that the better painters use, and I feel like I've kind of, the pendulum has kind of swung. So as I joked around when I made those god-awful Blood Bowl models I talked about earlier, it was 100% done by brush. Focus now, then gradually I added more, it's a little bit of airbrushing, a little more airbrushing. It's now gotten the point where I'm trying to paint eyes on my models with an airbrush. So is there a right balance in terms of choosing the right tool for the right time when painting a model?
So I use an airbrush every day. But I try not to let my models look airbrushed, if that makes sense. Like, if I'm doing object source lighting, like making a plasma gun glow, then, the airbrush look is fine. But I use an airbrush just strictly as a time-saving tool, and that generally is just my base coats and shading. And then I just go to the classic, pick up the brush and do the rest of the model and all the details. So yeah, for the most part, an airbrush is just the beginning part for me.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, you're not going to be, like you said, dotting eyes.
That's an extreme example, but I do find,
you're not going to be doing trim with an airbrush. You still need to use a paintbrush. So
I guess the other example I'd say more realistic is, so I was working on a Harmagot, and I had done the first couple layers with the airbrush, and then I was like, well, I really need to get this one section right, and I was trying to airbrush, and I finally wasn't getting it right, so I finally just succumbed and just did old-fashioned dry brushing, and I felt like I had, like, cheated or, kind of went down to a lower standard. Was that a mistake, or did, at the end, this is the end product? It doesn't matter how I got there.
Yeah, no, I've now that I've been doing commission painting for so long, I used to have rules that you didn't dry brush, unless it was a base, because I felt like it was cheating. But now that I do it so often, I think it's every tool that you have at your disposal, use. Because in the end, it's all about the final product, So, I use dry brushing now. Like, why wouldn't you if it's going to look good? Sometimes you don't leave it at the dry brush stage. You might want to do a wash or, a shade over that, and then you can just touch things up here and there afterwards. But no, I think a mixture of airbrush, dry brush, good line work, all that makes for a good looking army. So
here.
Good for you.
Thank you. Well, the model's not done yet. Ray's still patiently waiting, but I'm getting to those closing stages, and that's where I'm really just getting. That's, I think, the hard part is getting the confidence to make those harder techniques, or just finishing it. You know, like I said, there's some line work that needs to be done. There's, you know, the base coats are done, so now it's just getting that shading right and to get the eyeballs right and get the ends of claws right. And am I doing non-metal metallics and all and object lights, or am I just going to go keep it simple? You know, what am I doing at this point? So I think it's more paralysis from analysis at this point than actually getting the models done.
Yeah. So when you're doing like a full army, which, you know, I do a couple armies a month usually, you know, I don't know, four armies a month sometimes. You have to plan it out ahead. You know, so you have to decide the airbrush is first. So you're going to try and do everything with airbrush first that you can before you go to the next step. So, yeah, it's just a matter of planning out everything. And then it usually falls together pretty quickly. But, you know, I can't imagine, you know, painting full armies for myself, much less anyone else, if I also have, like, a real, you know, 9-to-5 job. So props to you for even trying to do Ray's army.
Yeah. Listen, I tried a little bit here and there. And I think the trick for me, and this is a guy who is, so not only my hobby time, you know, includes this podcast, includes running tournaments, is I'm also a husband and father of two. So hobby time usually doesn't start until after 9 o'clock. And
I'm asleep then.
Yeah. So I mean, the horrible part is I've spent a tremendous amount of money on lighting because I'm usually in the dark at that point. And that's something where the running joke is in the family. I painted and I was up pretty late getting that army ready. And then it's kind of like Christmas the next morning because where my painting room is has great sunlight, but only from 6 a.m. till 10 a.m. So then I get to look at, how did the model really turn out? And sometimes I'm excited, and sometimes I got a, you know, package of socks for Christmas. So,
know. Lighting is important. I use daylight LED bulbs at my desk. And the reason I chose those is because when you go to a game store, you know, a game store usually has plenty of windows, or, you know, it's usually in like a shopping center or something. So one side of the store is generally all glass. So there's good lighting, is what I mean. So that lighting, that daylight lighting, is pretty close to the same as the bulbs. So generally what you're painting and looking at is what it's going to look like at the game store. So that's why I chose that.
That's an interesting idea. Yeah, I never thought it would just, yeah, match the lighting in your environment.
Yeah. Just the silly little things that when you do this for so long, you end up picking up.
Ray, I know you had a list of questions. Anything else from your list?
When is it a good idea, and when is it a bad idea usually to do the shade over the whole model?
It really depends, because, you know, it really depends on what you're working with. So if it's a Tyranid, like you were talking about, you can sometimes get away with, you know, a shade over the whole thing, depending on what colors you're going for. You know, is the skin and the armor, you know, pretty similar, or are they totally different? Because you don't want to wash or shade the skin with a brown if, you know, your armor is blue. So you got to pick and choose. But what I generally do, and I don't know, the shade is generally the last step for me. Like the Games Workshop way or the Duncan Rhodes way is do your base, do a shade, and then highlight. And I generally do the shade at the very end after all the highlighting. And what I feel that does is it blends all those highlights together and makes it less jarring looking. So, yeah. So I would say usually, as far as me personally, I say the shade is best to be done at the end.
Okay.
But that's a, you know, you'd have to watch my Twitch channel to really understand that. Because it's completely different. It's under Frontline Gaming TV. So on Frontline Gaming _ TV, if you're, you know, on Twitch. So you just search that. And my show is on Mondays and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific. And generally work till about 8. We do about 3 hours. And I generally try and get a model from primed to finished in that time, so we can kind of learn and go from there. But right now, so Wednesday will be my first show back from being, you know, having my knee surgery. And I will be starting my Ultramarines Primaris Marine Army. Ooh. And we're going to do that from start to finish over a couple of weeks and just do the entire army, bases, everything.
I think that'll be exciting. I think especially with the new points reduction, we should be seeing some more Primaris Marines on the table.
That's the idea.
Very nice. So I have to ask, as head painter, what management responsibilities do you have at Frontline Gaming?
Yeah, it sounds a lot more glamorous than it actually is. But so the idea of the artists that work in-house at the Frontline Gaming offices is that we're a team. So, you know, for those large 10,000 point commissions, we would tag team it together. And my job is to pick, you know, what artist is to do what step. Or are you just going to be doing the base coats? Or are you going to be doing this highlighting? But, you know, we haven't had any of those huge commissions recently in-house. So what I've been doing recently with my head, you know, studio title, whatever it is, I've been training the new apprentices. So we hired someone from local art college to start painting and assembling. And he's never done that exact thing before. But, you know, he's got the skills to be able to do it. So it's been kind of fun training someone who's never done any of this before to the higher level. So that's what I've been doing. It's a lot of training.
So I recently broke down and actually used the Frontline Gaming painting service, and it was a lot of hemming and hawing because I feel that my painting skill is that awful mid-ground, that I can do tabletop standard, but I can't get much. I can maybe on a good day get tabletop standard plus. I think it's much more that I have a bigger thought process in my head and just can't quite execute it. And the thought process in my mind was, I'm going to hire these guys to do it because that way it gets done sometime in this administration of current president, as opposed to if I did it and it just sits on my table. And so there was a lot of guilt involved. You know, I felt like I'd given up. You know, as a guy who was back in third and fourth edition, you know, I'm a pro hobbyist and I deserve to win best overall. And now I've got these really standout models because they came out exquisite, by the way. I'm super excited how they came out. But I had this kind of guilt of that I hired somebody to paint. Am I wrong?
It's kind of funny because the last commission I did that I actually finished up this last weekend was a bunch of Imperial characters, all tabletop, you know, plus standard. And the client actually sent a test model for me to, you know, to use as what his army looks like. And the guy was really good. You know, I was like, why are you paying me to do this? But when it comes right down to it, you know, you were saying, you want your army to be done. And, you know, if it's going to take you 4 years to do it, you're never going to actually get to enjoy the finished product. So, right. I mean, you know, I'm an advocate for people using commission services because that's how I pay my rent. But when it comes down to it, you know, I think people want to play the game and want to make it look good. So I don't fault people for commission painting and having a beautiful looking army. You know, and I don't feel like they put less effort in because they had to work to pay to have that money.
Sure. No, absolutely.
So just at least it was there. It was done, sure. You know?
So just as a quick testimonial of the quality. So I had my triumvirate of Yanid or Yanari done by you guys. And I was really focusing on the Incarn. That was pretty much the model I was using. The other two at that point weren't really part of the meta. So it's kind of like, yeah, well, I guess they're part of the package. And Yvraine came back, and she just stands out. And to give you an idea, we were just kind of joking about, you know, painting eyes. The artist not only painted the eyes, she's got mascara. Like, she literally has makeup on. And it just frames the face, and it just draws you in. And it's, you know, 30 millimeter model.
And yeah, it's a very small space.
Yeah, but it was just so well done. And it's just like, so now I'm like looking at, okay, what premium foam to transport these things? Because I don't want anything to happen to them now. And I've been driving some of the guys in our local meta nuts because I'm like, I need like an Inari list that involves these models. And I'm like, oh, well, you might want to do. No. It's got to have these models. They need to be on the table somehow.
Sure.
Don't
see,
give me this.
You don't feel bad then. See, yeah. You're really enjoying the product.
No,
so,
I really am.
Yeah. So I think it's a good thing.
I was just being that guy who went from one extreme. I really, when I put that order and I hung up, I was like, what have you done? And now I'm like, why have I done this sooner? I'm super excited.
You know, to be honest, if I had a little bit of extra money here and there, I would probably hire one of our artists to paint my armies.
Really?
Yeah, because my hobby time is so little that, I don't ever get any of my armies finished.
Yeah, I just can't help but forget your Tau that you had for a while. The Tron Tau.
Yeah, I never finished that army.
That was unfinished. We're all like a gaping awe of that thing. I'm like, yeah, it's not quite done.
I ended up selling that to someone in Arizona, actually. So,
well,
it's gone.
It's gone. So one last question from me, at least. And we always hear year after year the gargantuan project that is baking terrain for LVO.
Oh, my gosh. You're talking to the right guy.
So tell me about the painting techniques for terrain as opposed to how that's different from painting a model.
Yes. Use a lot more spray paint. So, fortunately, unfortunately, whatever you want to call it, I am the one that touches every single piece of terrain that went to LVO at least last year. And to give you a scope of what that entailed, it was, I think last year we did 150 tables for the expansion of LVO. And I believe we have to do that amount this year. But, you know, we only have 2 months. So,
I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, now we did get a lot of tables done for the SoCal Open. And with the SoCal Open, we do the tables for that. And then those will go to Vegas, and they will be stored in our warehouse in Vegas. And then next year, we will do more tables for SoCal Open. And then that's just kind of how it goes. It's just those tables will then go to Vegas, because Vegas is just going to keep getting bigger. And then we'll just keep doing the terrain for SoCal Open, and it'll just feed the machine.
Sure.
But as far as the painting part, Rust-Oleum is your friend, the spray paint.
Really? Okay.
The Painter's Touch is what we use. It's like a primer and paint in one.
Mm-hmm.
But the steps that we take for doing, you know, the ITC terrain, which is the MDF stuff, is get the cheapest black primer you can get. So just black paint. So we go to Home Depot and just get their off-brand black paint. And we just paint every piece of terrain black. And then you have to decide, you know, what tables they're going for. Is this going to be a snow city? Is this going to be a desert city? Whatever it is. And then use that spray paint, and you do kind of a zenithal, which is more or less a 45 degree angle that you shoot towards the building, leaving you know, the base kind of dark still. You know, it'll still show the black. But, you know, you could have a yellow building, a blue, whatever. But it'll have that nice transition. And then my rule for every piece of terrain is that we dry brush everything with gray. It doesn't matter what color it is. You dry brush it with gray, and it blends in, you know, your fade, so that that top spray over the black, it just blends it all in perfectly, and it makes it look like it's a worn city or, you know, rubble, whatever it is. Be the orc style terrain, the robot city, all of it has that gray dry brush on it, and it all really ties together. But that's it. Those are the steps. There's a little bit of airbrush shading here and there, but we do everything in bits and pieces. So the bricks for the buildings all get red or gray, whatever we decide, and they're all done separately, all done with spray paint.
Interesting.
And then you build the model, put it together, and then dry brush it.
Okay. Scroll back for a second to the Xenophil. One of the things with the Xenophil style, and especially when you, most of those tutorials came out, they're for a miniature. It's pretty easy to get that 45, then eventually like sharper angles as you get to brighter colors. With a terrain piece, it's sometimes 9 inches tall or something like that. How do you get that same angle so it isn't just the one floor that gets all the shading and also the other floor looks odd, you know, or it looks like there's striping or something like that? How do you get that effect?
So with Frontline's ITC range, anything that has levels, it's all modular. You know, you don't glue it together. So I just treat every level as its own building. And yeah, so you do all the shading the same way. So that's why each level looks like it has that gradient, and then it's, you know, and then you go to the next one.
Yeah.
The modular aspect that way. Otherwise, if you're using something like, I don't know, Games Workshop stuff, where some of those walls are really high. They're 2-3 floors high and flat, mm-hmm. like the Aquila building or whatever they're called. That, I think you would just do the same Xenophil treatment, but pull the spray can further away is what we do. So it's more of a fade overall. You're just kind of giving the color a dusting. So, it's hard to really describe it. You know, without being able to show you what I'm talking about. But, I don't know, we usually are about 8 inches away when we're spraying a building, you know, with the spray cans. Because sometimes we have volunteers, so I got to teach each person exactly what we're doing. It's about 8 inches away. Mm-hmm. But for larger buildings, you know, maybe go back about a foot, foot and a half, and that'll give you that lighter spray and wider pattern.
Yeah. It's funny because I used the good old Wagner Power Painter with the Home Depot, the Bear paints, which have the primer and paint in one.
So I can get serious stuff.
I don't know if it's serious or not. It's, you know, when you look at the mechanics of this Power Painter thing, it's kind of like, really? This is what I spent my money on? But the fact that I can do, you know, that kind of shading on, especially when it comes to organic shapes like rocks and hills and stuff like that, super quick. But the trick I run into, I tend to resemble a Tyrannosaurus Rex because I need to hold the model far enough away from me, but my arms aren't quite long enough, so I have this weird position where the gun is like up near my face and trying not to spray my face at the same time. The paint on the model. Because otherwise, if you just shoot it with the Power Painter, the model goes flying across the garage floor, and it doesn't look right either. So it's kind of a comical thing to watch, but
that's what should be in one of your next videos.
Yeah, I need to. Which actually, here I keep coming up with more questions. Ray's telling me to wrap it up. One of the things I've always been worried about is, so I've got my camera for videos, and my greatest fear is one of these days I'm going to spray the camera.
My recommendation is just don't.
Just don't. Stop it.
Most cameras have a zoom function. Use it.
Well, it's, you know, you say that, but it's funny because when I use the zoom function to, you know, at a certain point, the even the resolution just gets so granular. I'm like, ugh, it's better just to reposition the camera again. So then I get the perfect positioning and everything's great, and lo and behold, to get to that one angle somehow, at one point I literally had my hand going in between the legs of the tripod to get to the model. So it was just the most ridiculous. So when I watch you, as well as some of the other, by the way, Brandon, I think, is the only painter on the internet for this hobby that does not use a foreign accent. It's amazing how you can still get good visibility of what you're doing and you're still painting to the top of your level. It's incredibly difficult to figure it out.
Well, thank you. I cannot get that crappy camera to actually work very well. I've got good cameras coming, but that's quite the process.
Okay.
So, I'm using a webcam that we just kind of found extra in the Frontline Gaming warehouse, like probably something they had when they started Frontline Gaming like 7 years ago. It's not good.
It's been good. I think the only time I ever saw a model of it, I couldn't really get a good look at it, was when you tried to paint Lilith, because it just kept whitewashing everything.
Yeah, she's just a little too pale. So, yeah, anything that's brightly colored, I can't do on the stream right now. So that's why I figured I'd do the Ultramarines until that camera shows up.
Awesome. Well, Brandon, is there anything else you wanted to cover before we wrap things up?
No, check us out at flgpaintstudio.com. You can see galleries of stuff we've been working on, and we've got a tab for featured projects, which is, you know, just stuff that has been done more recently. And then I also have a blog on that website that I try and post up, you know, stuff that I painted on stream, and, you know, answer people's questions and stuff on there. And then if you do want to see my specific work, you can be my friend on Facebook if you'd like, under Brandon Miner, but also Instagram. I've been posting a lot on Instagram lately, and my Instagram is Bcuz Paints. It's B-C-U-Z Paints. And I try and update that, you know, a few times a week. So there's my plug.
Excellent. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for being on the show, and hope to see you again soon. We miss you out here. But we're also very proud of you for making it to the big Frontline Gaming team.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.